the scar.
"You poor old gentleman,"
Eurycleia said, welcoming Odysseus into the room.
"You've seen some troubles, I should say."
"Aye."
Odysseus sat down opposite her. She was much as he remembered. When he was a child, he had thought of her as aged, although she must have been quite a young woman. She was old now, that was for certain. A creased face, white hair, bent back.
"Well, you can forget about them for a bit while I wash the grime of your travels from you."
"You're very kind. I understand you were nursemaid to the old king."
"That I was, sir. I tended Odysseus from a baby, and looked after him when he grew to boyhood and youth. And I've done the same for his son, Prince Telemachus."
"How lucky they were!"
Odysseus leaned back and sighed. Eurycleia really knew how to wash feet. She was pulling up the roll of his underlinen now and working her hands up his lower legs towards his knees. Such a blissful feeling.
"No!" A terrible thought crashed into his mind. A cry from Eurycleia and a clang and a splash as her hands dropped down onto the bronze basin.
She was staring at the upper part of his leg. He should have remembered. That scar on his right thigh, the rip of an angry boar's tusk. Eurycleia pushed the basin aside and came forward on her knees. She hugged his legs and wept for joy.
"Oh, my master, my master, my darling master is home!"
"Eurycleia, not a word, not a word. No one must know, not yet." He explained, unable to keep back his own tears, that, aside from her, Telemachus was the only one in Ithaca who knew who he was. He wanted it to stay that way.
"Of course, my darling boy. All will be well now, I'm sure of that."
She gave the scar an affectionate rub with her fingers, and reminiscence clouded her eyes.
"When you were a newborn, your face red and angry, and your hair all thick and tufted like an animal's, your grandfather came to inspect you. I'm talking about your mother's father, old Autolycus, the son of Hermes, and as wicked a scoundrel as you could find on this earth. We all loved him, though. Your mother, poor Anticlea, you know she's been in the land of the dead these 7 years past, don't you?"
"Yes," said Odysseus. "Telemachus told me."
He feared Eurycleia might not be able to cope if he told her that he had, in fact, heard the news in the land of the dead from Anticlea herself, from her ghost.
"Great lady she was. It was an easy death for her. It hit your poor father hard. He's never been the same. Where was I? Oh, yes, all those years ago. Your mother said to Autolycus when he came to visit, 'Father, can you think of a name for this baby?' The old rascal pondered for a second and said, 'Well, now, in my long life, a lot of people have pestered me and made me angry. So why don't you call the child Odysseus?'
'Because I have been angered, Odysseumenos, by so many men and women, let his name be Odysseus,' Homer has Autolycus reported as saying. Plenty of scholars have different explanations for the name's meaning and etymology."
"Of course, your parents thought that was a pretty poor name. But you know the custom. The relative who names a child forms a special bond with it. And later, when you were, 12 years old, I should think, you and King Laertes and Queen Anticlea were invited over to Autolycus's palace in Parnassus. He wanted to share a good portion of his treasure with you. And on the second day of your stay, we went on a hunt, said Odysseus. A huge boar burst out of nowhere and gored me just there, gashed me from the knee almost up to the hip. And we ran up to you fearing the worst, my darling. I've never seen so much blood. Thought you were on your way to Hades. But you just hopped up and down, grinning, bless your heart. You were pointing to the bushes, because I'd speared the boar. And there it was, dead as dead. Never was prouder of anything. And how proud we all were, too. We roasted the boar that night, big enough to feed 30 of us. A voice interrupted them. May I come in? Odysseus rose from his stool.
Majesty, I have much to thank you for.
Penelope smiled at the stranger. You are very welcome, sir. Odysseus dropped to his knees and looked down at the floor. He did not trust himself to look into her eyes. Surely she would see beyond Athena's disguise and know him. I understand from my maids that you taught that dreadful Iris a lesson. His violence and his disdain for the strangers who come to our gates have long been a source of dishonour to us. Do please sit down. Eurycleia, perhaps I can take your stool. This gentleman and I will talk for a moment. Eurycleia backed out of the room, her eyes shining, her eyebrows up at the very top of her forehead, and her whole face, to Odysseus's alarm, looking quite ready to burst with excitement. Penelope appeared to notice nothing unusual, however, and soon they were alone. They tell me that you are a man who has travelled much around the islands in the last few years, sir. You may know my story. Odysseus nodded, still keeping his eyes off hers. He softened as best he could the rich, strong tones of his voice into the old man's hoarse whine that Athena had implanted, infusing it with an accent from the eastern Aegean.
Aye, mum. The world knows that Queen Penelope awaits the return of her husband Odysseus, the son of Laertes.
You did not meet him anywhere, I suppose?
Had not that good fortune, mum, no. But I did hear stories of his surviving the great storms that blew the ships out of Troy, and since then of his overcoming many an obstacle. I don't doubt he will return.
You heard stories. Yes, I fear that is all they are. I have heard enough of those. Meanwhile, you see, I am forced to choose from out of the scores of suitors who clamour at me for a decision.
A decision, Majesty?
The longer I delay, and heaven knows I would delay for the rest of my days if I could, the longer I delay, the more of my son's inheritance this pack of barbarians devours. The sooner I choose one, the sooner the others will depart. Then I shall go away with my choice of husband to live with him on his island, whichever it might be, and leave Ithaca to my boy. It is the only halfway acceptable outcome.
And how, if I might be permitted to ask, my lady, will you make your choice of husband?
I don't know. They're all so ghastly. Listen to them down there. Can you hear them? Amongst them, the voice of my son Telemachus trying his best to keep order. The sound of the suitors braying and hooting came clearly up from the hall below. And yes, through their din, Odysseus could hear the imploring voice of Telemachus.
But how do I choose? Sighed Penelope.
Their leader, or at least the loudest and most imperious of them, is Antinous. I cannot bear the man. I know that he tried to harm my son on his return from the mainland. There is Eurymachus. He certainly knows how to charm, but there's a look in his eyes. I know I cannot trust him. Polybus is the richest. I could select him for that and no other reason, I suppose. Amphinomus, well, I sometimes think he is the most decent and considerate. Leocritus He's handsome, very handsome. You could call him beautiful.
Excuse me?
Odysseus had made a strange snorting sound.
Your pardon, mum, something in my throat.
But none of them, not all 108 combined, come close to my Odysseus in any quality of strength, skill, intelligence, wit.
Luke's?
And, of course, looks, too. If he were here now, he and my son would soon rid the house of those sons of bitches. The bastards would be howling for mercy.
Penelope went to close the door and shut out the noise. Just then, below in the hall, Telemachus sneezed. A sneeze so loud it echoed round the passageways and up the stairs. Penelope laughed. A sneeze confirms what was just said.
And what was just said?
That the bastards would be howling for mercy.
Well, I can dream.
An idea formed inside Odysseus's head. He wondered if Athena had put it there. It seemed to arrive full-born, just as the goddess had.
Strength, you say, mum?
Certainly.
Is it true, I heard it somewhere, that he had his own bow, which only he...
Penelope gasped and clapped her hands.
Oh, sir, you've given me an idea. Such a fine idea. I know exactly how to choose my next husband.
Odysseus smiled. The idea seemed to have hopped from Athena's mind to his, and thence to Penelope's. She gave an almost mischievous grin.
I hope you will be our guest through the evening, sir. If you stay, I think I can promise great entertainment.
Then certainly I shall stay, madam, with deepest gratitude for your hospitality and kindness.
Nonsense. Oh, and one more thing. Perhaps you have the gift of determining the meaning of dreams?
Oh, I have been known to read them. Have you been troubled?
See what you make of this. There's a flock of geese that comes to my pond. They make a great noise. Every morning I go out to feed them. But in this dream, which returns to me again and again, I come out of the house with my bowl of grain, and I hear the cry of an eagle circling overhead. Then I look and see feathers, blood, and dead geese everywhere. The eagle has killed them all, every one. It's very upsetting. What do you think it means?
Oh, but I never heard a dream whose meaning is so plain, said Odysseus. The eagle is your husband. The noisy, greedy geese are your noisy, greedy suitors. The dream proclaims quite clearly that Odysseus will return to kill them all.
Yes, that occurred to me too, of course, but sometimes dreams do not forecast what will happen, so much as repeat and repeat what the dreamer wants to happen, which is not the same thing at all.
Still, Majesty, I am confident in my interpretation,
and I thank you for it.
Penelope rose and made for the door.
I am glad you came to visit us, stranger. I can't quite account for this, but your presence gives me strength and a sense of confidence that I've not felt for a very long time. Look out for me in the hall tonight.
Madam, I shall.
Odysseus waited for the door to close before adding, And look out for me, darling wife. Look out for me.